Greetings, I am Shusada Kona Kumada. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. This is Shusada Kona Kumada. You're listening to Satsang on BBS Radio. Thank you for joining us again tonight. We got a lot to talk about, so let's go ahead and get started. Take a nice deep breath, and I'm going to clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. And now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to all of you listening tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. All right, come on back to me. We just had a very dynamic session here in Charlotte, and we covered an awful lot of ground in an hour and a half. And usually when we, whatever we cover in session kind of gets brought in for our BBS program as well, I don't know that that's going to happen. We didn't even end up talking about what I thought we were going to talk about tonight. So let's see where this goes. Now, Justin, did you say that you had something very specific you wanted to talk about, or do you want me to just get started?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Can you put the apple down long enough? Justin's like eating. Come sit in the hot seat. Here.
Okay. Okay, hello everybody. So I was, you know, in this day and age, a lot of people are in these groups and these, there's all these circles of self-development programs and people talk about being your authentic self. And I've had experiences where I felt like I'm like not really being my, especially when I was younger, my like real self or my full self, or I felt kind of disassociated or something. So I wanted to see what you thought about this whole authentic self idea. I mean, I guess the authentic self is the self, but is there something to that, or is it all just, you know, I'm my authentic self, you know? I don't know. So that's one thing I wanted to talk about.
All right. So initially what comes to me when I hear that term authentic self would be like you with no pretense. So my concept of it, and I don't know for sure that that's how it's meant because it's not a term I'm terribly familiar with. But I'm guessing that it's from the space of, well, ultimately what you said is accurate. It would be the self. It would be you minus ego, which is the self, capital S. But that's not, that can't in a sense be what people are referring to unless they have a very convoluted sense of kind of, it sounds like something you can just turn on, right? Which from the space of the ego is not accurate at all. So I'm guessing that when they say that, they're what they're saying is that the places where you can see that you do wear a mask for others, that you do put on airs for others, that you are in denial about things that are, that all of that falls away. And what's left is, you know, kind of what you are. Now, of course, that's still programmed to a certain degree, but less of a degree than before. And I'm guessing that that's what is meant by that. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's beautiful conceptually, but if you have someone walking around going, you know, this is me, I'm my authentic self, right? Yeah. You know, obviously that's coming out of the ego, and that's ego. It's all ego. You know, the authentic self doesn't go around tooting its own horn and calling, look at me, I am the self. It's hysterical. Yeah. So, again, everything has its place, and within a certain dynamic where people need that level of teaching, where they need to start to recognize, oh, like there are places where I may feel like here's what I really want to say, but I stop myself because of I'm afraid what people will think, I'm afraid of this, or I don't want that to happen. And I need to start dropping that and to really allow that voice to come forward. I think that's really what they're talking about. You know, it's more authentic to who you are. And so not necessarily completely without the programming in place, just less of it. Yeah. Does that make sense to answer it?
So do we need to be that in order to do this work? I mean, I guess doing the work, you'll become more and more the authentic self, and then you'll just, you know, be non-identified with anything that's not the self. So you'll be good anyway.
How could the self be anything but authentic? That's my question. Yeah. Now, if it's the authentic self, small s, that's impossible. Because the self with a small s is the ego, and there's nothing authentic to that at all.
See, yeah.
I thought that. That's what I was thinking. Because there, you know, there's like a, I don't know. I guess there's a frame of mind where you can say what's really on your mind, and you can be a little more open with people, and you think this is my authentic self. You know, I'm actually thought I was a vegan, but I'm a meat eater. I'm being my authentic self now. But I think the real authentic self is, you can't be the authentic self as long as you are operating from the little s, you know, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, to be picky, you don't operate as the little s.
I don't
understand. Because you, capital Y, can't.
Oh, I have a question.
Only the little s operates as the little s. Period. Yeah?
So who is... Okay,
you with me there?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
But, you know, they say, I keep hearing on the streets that God is the doer. And I'm like, you know, so what's up with crime? If God is, God is the doer of all things, then how is it that anything is wrong? You know, how is it that...
And who said anything was wrong?
Well, the police. You know, it's like you're making mistakes on a regular basis, I guess, as people, as humans. But if God is the doer, I guess you would assume everything you did was perfect, you know. So like if I do something wrong and I'm like, well, that was God.
Right, maybe we will talk about denial tonight. That's great. Yeah, well, and that's exactly what ego would do with that, and it uses denial very effectively that way. Yeah, yeah. I didn't do that. That was God. And if it was God, it's all perfect. Is there truth to that? Well, sure. In highest truth, everything going on here is absolutely perfect. Why? Because everything going on here, whether it can be viewed as good or bad, is all leading to the same space, right? Everything is leading to the same space, a greater recognition and experience of that which you are, which is God. Right? However, within this space, it looks like there's good and bad, right? And so because we live in a space that's purely conceptual and we are identified with concept and we have turned concept into reality, now to say there's bad stuff going on, that's accurate. That's accurate. And is it God doing the bad stuff? No. No, no, it's the ego doing that stuff. Yeah. Yeah, that's just it. You can't, this is the trouble with spiritual teachings is you can give a spiritual teaching out, but a person is only capable of doing something based on their own level of consciousness. Yeah. So if consciousness is stuck in a fallen paradigm, you can give them an exalted level of understanding, but all they can do with it is turn it into something else that's mental, and it's a concept that they have to try to reason out and then utilize however it best serves the ego. Right? Every concept is utilized however it best serves the ego and the ego stories. So it becomes, you know, use the teachings to keep you from doing deeper work. Use the teachings to keep you in a space where you're comfortable in denial, and use them to use them as the means to condemn others and to judge others and to feel justified in doing it because you have a concept in place that you can say, like, I get that and I live that and I walk that, you know. And you notice that in these things, what you hear over and over and over again is I. So whenever you're looking at like anyone's writing, it's very obvious where they're coming from just looking at the writing. If it's full of I, it's completely ego bound. Yeah. And you'll also notice that when you read writing from a person who's functioning outside of that, there's very little of that that comes into their writing, right? Because it's not that. It's not that. So that's the tricky thing is, as a teacher of very deep understandings, I can give pieces out, but you have no capacity from where you're sitting to truly understand what it is I'm saying. And so the work for the seeker is to continually recheck in and look at this concept. Yeah. Because you'll notice over time how you perceive it changes, you know, as you continue to evolve and you're doing your own work and you're digging deeper and deeper and more is dissolving, then the understanding you get expands, you know, the personal self shrinks and simultaneously your understandings expand. Yeah. And then at one point you have the beautiful moment where the understanding locks in and you're like, oh, wow. Wow. Like, I so get that. It's so simple. It always comes back to that. It's so simple. How did I never see that? Yeah. Well, you couldn't, right? Ego's not capable of seeing truth. It can only see its own story. And it can only work to perpetuate its own story. That's all it's capable of. Yeah. So we work this thing where it's, you know, you're kind of walking both sides. You're trying to walk from a higher place without having the experience yet, right? And trying to kind of, you're also walking the space of the ego because it's all you know and all you're kind of capable of, and you're being pushed to you know, loosen up on one and grow the other, and but not be afraid to stay in the other and back and forth. And it can seem very convoluted. And like you, Justin, you've experienced kind of like it feels crazy. I have nothing to grab onto. Yeah. And that's exactly it. There's nothing to grab onto. You just have to follow the guidance. You know, the little, I'm not very strict with people about what they do per se, but the few things that I will tell you to do, you need to do them. And there's a reason I'm telling you to do them, you know, because I don't tell people to do much. It's very minimal compared to most teachers out there who have a long list of things to do. It's very, very minimal. And certainly at your own pace. But without that, without staying focused in those areas, it's just too hard to make real headway, because any little bit you get, you'll lose, you know, unless it's kind of like in the universe, everything is in constant motion, right? There is no stasis. So you're either moving forward. Place on the spiritual path. There just isn't. Yeah. The ego fights really hard to find a resting place in everything because it wants stability. You know, it wants comfort and stability, but it doesn't exist. It just does not exist. You know, the spot we're in right now in the universe on this planet will never, ever be in this spot again, ever. And we just lost it. It's gone. Yeah. Never to return. And that's the reality of consciousness itself, constantly expanding and moving or retreating, you know, backwards. And it takes a lot of drive to continue taking those steps, especially when the experience isn't yours yet, you know, just to kind of, okay, I'm just going to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And I'm going to keep walking this out and hoping that at some point I get one of those experiences where I'm like, oh, you know, oh my gosh, I've seen something. I've seen something major. And, you know, you don't forget that. Mm-hmm. And you've had those. Mm-hmm. You've had those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Anything else concerning that?
Well, yeah, I'm, well, cause I kind of feel like I'm, you know, I don't, there's no like rules when we come into satsang about what we can talk about, what we can't talk about, or like do we need to just focus on spiritual stuff, or can we get into some emotional issues that we might be having, you know? Anyway, I'll just touch a little bit about what I'm feeling right now. You know, when I was growing up, I was kind of like, I kind of like had to like shove my real self aside inside myself. To sort of like, because there's a lot of like judgment and a lot of hiding and a lot of nonsense and stuff in my family. So I just kind of, I grew up with the fundamental belief that being who I am is not safe. So I have to kind of like be who they want me to be, or, you know, do whatever I need to do for approval or whatever. And I was terrified to be my true self because, you know, it was clashing with not, you know, with a lot, because my true self is, well, you know, here I am sitting with you. So, you know, I grew up with a lot of religious family members and stuff. And so as I've gotten older, I kind of like became ingrained in me where when I'm with people, I feel like I kind of maybe could be coming from a more genuine place when I speak to people. You know, I tend to, kind of use sarcasm a lot, I noticed, and it's like a habit, though, you know. And but I guess now that I'm noticing it, and I'm wanting to speak from a, I'm afraid of becoming, I don't want to lose my humor crutch, because I'm afraid of going into an emotional place where I'd feel things that I'm not comfortable with, and then I'd lose my sense of humor. I never want to feel. I just want to laugh. So I don't know.
Yeah, you and Robin Williams, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, a lot of comedians.
Yes, absolutely.
That way. Like, yeah. This disassociation going on inside them, and they are hyper vigilant at approving, like getting
approval from people. Obviously, that's their whole thing. I mean, yeah, there's famous ones, but comedians that are trying to make it, they have rough lives. I mean, they're traveling all the time, going to bars. A lot of people don't even think they're funny, getting a lot of rejection, and they're not happy individuals. A lot of them deal with a lot of depression and all that type of stuff. So I just wanted to, I don't know. It's weird. All that stuff just came out of my mouth. So what do you think about all that?
So there it is. Well, okay. So I'm going to go back to where you first started, which is that it's that saying, you don't know what you can and can't talk about. It's kind of all open, but I'm just going to correct you on one thing that you said. You know, do we talk about spiritual things or emotional? There's nothing that's not spiritual. Okay. So let's not forget that. It's a key understanding. Everything is spiritual because everything is of spirit. So by definition, it is spiritual. So let's not pigeonhole anything as, you know, because this is part of my life where it doesn't feel spiritual. It's not, you know, like what I do when I go to the movies, but it is, it all is, right? Your life is your spiritual path and it's all spiritual. So, okay, that piece done. To move to what you were saying about your kind of your voice, especially sarcasm, and I can speak directly to the sarcasm piece because I am from the Northeast, and everyone who lives in the Northeast of this country lives in sarcasm. You're born into it. You take like a PL answer over there, not in red. You're born into it. You live with it on a daily basis. It's how you function in the world. And it turns into this very twisted thing. Like it's kind of almost how you show love to other people is how you're sarcastic with them and the way you tease them and do all this stuff. And it's really weird. But the sarcasm, and it is kind of nicely fitting for the Northeast. You know, there's a lot of pain that sits in the Northeast of this country. I don't know, you know, for people who are energetically very sensitive, you feel it when you are in the Northeast. It hurts there. She's nodding her head again. And I go through places like when I go up to New York to go back home, there are certain areas that you'll drive through and you're like, oh, my word, is there a lot of pain trapped here? And you have a lot of collective pain through the American Revolution that all took place through that area, you know, the French and Indian Wars, and you have all of this stuff, right? Not to mention that the whole Puritan kind of mentality was rooted there and really took hold there. And so people who are born and raised generation after generation in that area, like you're a cellular product of all of that and you carry all of that with you. So you take on sarcasm as some means of covering the pain and moving into a space where you're capable of coming out on top. That's what sarcasm does. You know, it's this coping mechanism that's very passive aggressive, and it's a way to make a cutting remark that's meant to hurt in a way that it allows me to feel better about myself. And it may not bring you happiness, right? But if it makes you feel better than you think they're feeling in the moment, it's worth it, right? And that's really what happens. And it's something that it's so, because you're taught to do it and it's patterned and imprinted into you from a very young age, it's hard to break that. But you, at a certain point, and this is what you're speaking to, you recognize what's going on there. And you're like, wow, like every time I do that, I'm actually hurting people. You know, and I'm hurting people not because I really want to hurt them. It's really more because I just don't want to hurt. Right. And so one begets the other. And is that really who I want to be? Is that how I want to be? And it's like, no. And maybe in the moment, I just need to recognize my own pain and be honest about that. And if you hit that space, what a priceless place to be, because to just be honest with what's moving, you know, to say, wow, I'm sure you didn't intend for that to affect me the way it just did, but that really stung. You know, what you said just really stung. And it's different coming from that place than it is if you were to say, you know, well, thanks a lot. That felt great. You know, so that right there is going to put someone on the defensive very quickly, right? But to come in softer and just say, and from the space of like, I'm sure it wasn't your intention, giving them the benefit of the doubt. I'm sure it wasn't your intention, but that really hurt. That stung, you know, and not to say you're a jerk or thanks a lot or anything else, but just to lay it out there and then let them do whatever they're going to do with it. Right. But you had that moment of you've actually given the other person an opportunity. Now it's their choice to do whatever they're going to do with it. They can get defensive because in that moment they feel like you're the perpetrator, right? You know, you just became the bad guy because you forced them to look at something that brings them pain. Okay, and they can do that, right? You don't take that personally because in that moment, they're only giving you what they're capable of giving you. They're just not capable of seeing themselves that clearly and being honest about what they see. But you never know. Maybe you luck into this perfect little moment and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I really didn't mean to hurt you. Or I didn't realize it came out that way. You know, that wasn't my intention. And if it happens, great. And then you take them at their word. Yeah, I didn't think it would be your intention because I know you care for me, right? And that's a hard thing to do, especially when you're raised in an environment where you've experienced a lot of emotional pain, is it's very hard to take people at their word. And even if you're not raised in an environment with a lot of emotional pain, it's hard to take people at their word. Because once our story is locked in place, and I'll take me and my husband for an example. So once I had a story in place about him, and I was looking for reasons or looking for any sign that to me meant he didn't love me, right? Because that's really what I wanted to prove to myself, that he doesn't love me. It made me incapable of, if he told me he loved me, which he did all the time, of really hearing him, you know. And what a disservice it was to him for me to go through all this time where I would take his word as just, oh, yeah, you know, he's just saying that, when that wasn't necessarily the case at all. And so at some point, I think even my own guide kind of said to me, you know, so what if you just take someone at their word? Byron Katie would say the same thing, you know. I know it's true because you told me, right? Why would you lie to me? You don't have any reason to lie to me. And so I literally would sit in the same space with my husband. He's married to me, you know. He had children with me. Like, why would he lie to me? And even though the story in the head wants to go, well, I'll tell you why he'd lie to you because of this, 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 and the other thing, right? It's like, well, but wait a minute. Pull back. Why would he lie? And how's that going to serve him, right? And then to start going, yeah, oh my God. And then to start allowing it in. He does love me. Wow. Like, how cool is that? He actually does, you know. And to just accept it. And now you're in a completely different place to receive the person when you can take them at their word and stop second guessing everything they're saying. But that's what everybody does, you know. Someone, especially when you're raised that way, if you're so used to sarcasm all the time, you don't trust anybody. Why would you? You know, like, why would you? You're watching the people you care about cut other people down all the time. So where in there would I think they wouldn't do it to me? Right? Even if you're not raised in the situation you were raised in, you know, that's something that sarcasm does to people, you know. And so you don't have this overwhelming sense of trust, unless it's maybe a few people that you've gotten really close with, and maybe just with a few of you, you aren't that way with each other, but you won't be like that outside of that circle, you know. And it's hard to let go of that compulsion to be that way. Yeah. And people who use humor, you know, sarcasm can be seen as humor, but even other kinds of humor that aren't necessarily sarcastic, that's just meant to cover up the sense of being uncomfortable or the sense of something hitting home that you don't want. You know, you don't want to recognize it, much less have anybody else see that it affected you. And why are we so afraid to let people see when something they've said or done has affected us? You know, and that's really the question. Like, what does it say about us, and this is stuff like that's what I'd sit with and look at. So in my world, like, what does it say about me if people see I have a moment of vulnerability, or if I have a moment of insecurity or fear? What does it say about me? And now I get to look at, oh, you're afraid that people are going to think you're weak, or you're afraid that people will think that they can, you know, get one over on you because you're easily manipulated, or, you know, like all of that stuff. And then you can go deeper yet. And why am I afraid of it? Why? Oh, easy, because I remember being taught from the time I was little that, you know, boys don't cry. Don't you cry. It looks, so you look like you're weak, and you're not weak. Boys are strong. You got to be strong, right? And so you can see that, ooh, it sits there. Right. And now you can go and you can start to question that. Is that true? Where does that come from? You know, where does that come from? And is it true? Right. And then if you can get into it and go, well, that's not true. Now you go, well, why the hell am I holding on to it then? Yeah. How is it serving me to hold on to that story? And you go, it's not. Right. And here's where the rubber meets the road. Right. So I will say to my students all the time, this is great. You've seen it. You've taken it apart and you've seen it. And now what do you do with it? Right. Because it always comes down to that. And that's that moment. How does it serve me to function that way? It doesn't. Okay. Now, what do I do with it? Right. So what does that mean? That means the next time the opportunity comes and humor wants to come in to cover it up, I don't do it. I check myself and I take that deep breath that's going to be needed in the moment. And I'm honest. Yeah. And I'm honest knowing that I can't control what's going to happen after that. I can't control how others are going to perceive me. I can't control any of it. But you know what? You never could anyway. Even when you thought that the things you were doing set yourself up so that you were seen a certain way or whatever, that was all a play of mind anyway. You can't control how anybody perceives you. It doesn't matter what you do, because the only way they can perceive is based on their own programming, right? That's all they're capable of. So, you know, you could be a completely different person tomorrow and they might perceive you exactly the same, right? Because it's all they've got. Yeah. Now, if you can get in and really let go of that aspect and just say, wow, like, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm just not going to. It's not going to be comfortable immediately, right? Because it's foreign to you. And every time you have the opportunity, it means that, you know, a trigger's there. And if the trigger's there, the emotions are running. Chemicals in the body are running. Like, everything's going on. Then it's hard to resist the urge to do what, you know, you've learned to do over time. But if you're real strong with it and you continue with it, it doesn't take long for that pattern, that habituated pattern, to become irrelevant. Yeah. Now, again, you don't know what people are going to do with it. So within it has to also be the understanding that people will only do with it what they're capable of, just like you. Right. So, but, you know, before now, I wasn't capable of not being sarcastic. Right. Wasn't that I didn't want to be. Right. I just literally couldn't. I couldn't. And so it's the same is true of them. Right. And in that, you know, you have a level of compassion for that. And you go, yeah, and you're like, I love to use things that Byron Katie has said, because they're so perfect. She would say, well, yeah, I mean, if I believed about me what you believe about me, I'd think the same thing. Of course. You know, makes perfect sense. So of course you do. And I'm not going to fault you for that. Right? And see, there's this beautiful detachment there. It's not personal anymore, because you see through it. You see, like, of course, that's all you're capable of, you know? So the only thing that matters is that I take care of me here, you know, that I'm true to me here, right? Of course, you, Justin, have, you know, another level of understandings that the you here, this emotional body, isn't actually you, right? But it is you until it isn't. So even though you have that understanding, it's like, yeah, so here's another level. Another level is stop putting on the masks and stop pretending to be something that you aren't right now. Even if none of it's actually me, it is me, at least until it's not. So now let me be me, my authentic self, right? My authentic self.
Yeah, that's why I brought that up.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good. All right. Okay. So I'm trying to gather my thoughts about. I guess I'm just taking all that in. What you just said. All right.
I don't want you to feel like you have to keep talking. You don't. Something else will come forward. What I did want to touch on at some point tonight was denial. And you know, we just kind of touched on it through what I was saying, but denial is such an enormous component in how people function in the world. I mean, it's enormous. And really, for anyone especially who would be listening to this through whatever means they get it, you know, if you're listening to me, it means you're at a place where you can start really looking at this stuff. And you need to, right? So you've got to start getting in there and being really honest about where is it that I still allow any level of denial to dictate where I'm perceiving from. And it's scary, right? Because denial wouldn't sit there unless there was pain there, right? Why is denial there? It's there to get you out of pain. So you either, you know, some people when they're in pain, they go into action mode, heavy duty action mode. And it's the action mode that's going to get them, you know, swung out of the pain. Other people will, it's, you know, a very weird kind of way to view it. But if they just wallow in their pain, that works for them on the level of, I mean, they stay in the pain, but there's a, for them, if they really are embracing the victimization of it, like that's their remedy, you know, to just wallow in it. But others take on denial, and you see it a lot coming through self-righteous behavior. You know, there's a lot of denial that sits there whenever anyone is very self-righteous, because it has to bolster itself up really strongly and take on this kind of persona that really has to hold very, very tightly to what it thinks is true, what it believes to be right, and all of that. And it will not waver. That's very typical of self-righteousness. And it sits there because, you know, self-righteousness is built on pain. So, you know, it doesn't want to go, oh, that hurts. Instead, I'm going to move out of that and I'm going to create the story, whatever it is that I need to create, so that I can really hold on to my belief. And whatever it was that challenged me, that brought the pain, we're going to squash it. So it's because you're in denial that you even move into self-righteousness. So whenever you can see yourself communicating with another person where you really are kind of, it's like that, you know, you'll watch in someone's body language when they move into there, that it's almost like they get this posture where they stand up and over a person, you know, I'm sure you know what that is. Having someone like looming over you is that it's meant to diminish you. It's meant for you to, you know, feel fear and, feel like the other person is stronger. And that's what self-righteousness is doing too, energetically. So you have to start to witness where you do that, you know, in places where I'm not comfortable. This is what I end up doing. Why am I doing that? What am I running away from? You know, it's not easy to do because it's not easy to see. And that was something that recently, you know, with the last big thing you moved through, that's what was coming at me when we were going back and forth, and you couldn't see it, right? So I kept holding this one point of focus with you to show it, to show it, to show it, but you can't see it. You can't see it. So what I'm saying to everyone is maybe you can't see it in the moment because there's too much running, and you're just, because that reactive mind is engaged, it's completely cut off any connection to the conscious you, you know, your own will. So you won't see it. But after the fact, it's super helpful to just, you know, humble yourself to go, wow, that didn't go well. At least start there. Like, that really didn't go well. And what part did I have in it? You know, what part could I have had in it? Start there. Okay. And start really looking, really looking. It's not easy, right? But if you can come back after the fact, and I'll speak to you because you wrote me, you know, several days after everything transpired, and what you had seen coming off of it was perfect. You know, it was a level of sight that was absolutely grace-filled. It was beautiful and absolutely perfect, right? What did I say? I said, by George, I think he's got it, right? It was like, it was absolutely perfect. You couldn't have seen that any other way. Any other way, you understand? Like, you had to walk through it. Remember, and I always go back to that psalm, you know, walking through the shadow, right, of the valley of death. And that's what it is. That's what you did. You walked through that experience, and it was hard, right? And you were angry and hurt and all of the emotions that came with it. But it was necessary, because the only way you ever truly get the understanding that you came out of it with, right, is to walk through it. You can't get that on an intellectual level. I mean, you can, right? But it has no energetic impact on you. It has no lasting value whatsoever. It's just, you know, intellectual knowledge. But you walked through something that was hard, right? And after the fact, you sat and you looked, and you got real, right? And in your humility, it opened the door so that understandings could flood in a way that it's the only way it happens, right? And that's why I always come back to, it takes great humility, just great humility to do this work, because it's the only way that we have these opportunities that come. You have to be humble enough. If you're all self-righteous after the fact, right, and 3 days later, you're still going on and on about, she doesn't know what she's talking about, and, you know, like, and you're pulling in all the stuff, right, you'll never have the experience because you're not open to it. Energetically, there's nothing about you that's open to seeing beyond, right? And it takes that something in you this time, quicker than the last time, recognized, huh? You know, I'll be damned if in the moment I still felt the same way as I did the last time, but there's something to it. There's something to what I was taught. You know, and you can go back and you can look at everything that was written, and you can now see it through a different lens and go, oh, wow, like, she was showing me something. I couldn't see it. All right. Well, you see it now. And now, because you had the understanding through the experience, it's given you experiential understanding. And that's what spiritual work is built on. And I can't stress that enough. That is the walk home. Yeah. It's never from books. It's never from videos. It's never from anything other than your own experience. You walked it, right? And no one can take it away from you now. You know what it's like to be convinced, absolutely convinced, that you see something that someone else doesn't. And then to truly, in the course of several days, have that turn in on itself so that you look deeper and you go, wow, oh my God. They were right. Yeah. And you don't lose that once you've had it, right? Now, you could lose it temporarily, right? Because you've had this experience before, right? And now here you are again. So here's the test again. And you moved through it a lot faster this time than you did the last time, right? Does it mean you won't be tested again? No, because you will. Funny thing about humility. We get tested with humility all the time. PLN will speak to that, won't you? Yeah. But that's necessary because it is through that where you really start to lock it in. It locks into your consciousness. And every time it does, you're expanding and expanding, you know. It won't feel like it. So what you just moved through on a level, you felt it. I know you did because the way you wrote to me after, you put pieces together, right, that you hadn't put together before, even though they'd been spoken to you, right? The teachings were there. You knew it conceptually, but you put it together this time.
I could see it.
Yeah, speak to that.
I could see it based upon what I went through. It's exactly what you said. Yeah, yeah. It's really weird to hear you saying these things because you're talking about things that I experienced personally. So it shows me that you know what's going on. Like, you know what I'm going through and what I actually went through, because that's exactly what happened. You know, it's true. It's one thing to sit around anywhere and talk about something, but to walk through it is a totally different ballgame, you know. So, yeah, it was, you're right. That's, I felt that too when I went, because the insights that I got at the end of that, I don't think I could have even seen that had I not gone to that place. I felt really, really good about it, but, you know, yeah, it's great. I'm happy that happened because I can see a lot clearer now, even than, you know, before. So, yeah,
much clearer now than before, and that's another very poignant lesson for you in how the gift is in the pain. It's right there, right? You just have to be willing, humble enough first. And then driven enough to go in and access and retrieve the gift, because it's right there. You just said it. There's no way you could have pieced it together and seen it that way unless you'd gone through what you went through. And what you went through hurt. Yeah. It hurt. It was obvious when I'm standing there, not standing, sitting, receiving these communications. It was obvious how much pain you were in, right? But I could only do what I knew I needed to do, because that was all I could give you without buying into your story. It was the only thing I could give you. But it set it up for you, so you had a golden opportunity, and that's all you can do. You can give them the opportunity, and are you going to take it or not? Your choice, you know, your choice. And I didn't know what you were going to do. There's no way to know, you know. You can hope that the student grabs it and does something with it, but you never do know. And you don't change your behavior based on, you know, oh, I'm afraid he's not gonna handle it well, so I better not. No, you don't do that at all. You give him what he needs. Not what he wants. You give him what he needs, right? And so the gift is there. The gift wasn't in your joy, you know. It wasn't in your peace. It wasn't in your state of mindlessness. The gift was in your pain, right? Oh, and now you can see where it was born and what it was born out of, and why did it manifest the way it did, and why did it lead me into the state where I held this position and where I was so, you know, adamant about it, and I pressed the agenda, and I was manipulative, and I was controlling and domineering, and like, you could see all of it, and it's like, wow. You know, wow, that's amazing. And the beautiful thing coming out of it, and I think with Mira we spoke to this before, is that, you know, it's not you. So, yeah, I laugh about the whole thing. You're in pain and everything, but I'm reading it and I'm chuckling. Because it's the ego doing what the ego does, right? But not for a millisecond did I think it was you. Well, why would I? It's not you. There's no judgment. I'm not judging you because you sat in a certain space, right? the ego did what the ego knew to do. I mean, that's it, right? And there's this beautiful moment with a student and a teacher where the student can see through the heart, and you have a moment where you actually, for the first time, see your teacher through your heart, you know, and you see, like, you're so connected. It's ridiculous. You're so connected. There's so much love there. And it's like, wow, like, she really loves me. She really, like, she's not kidding. She said she loves me. She really does. You know, and it, but it takes moving through these difficult things to get to that space, you know, and they're so worth it. They're so worth it. So if you don't have your own physical teacher in place, you can do these things that I'm telling you to do, you know, that we were talking about today. You can start looking deeper and questioning all these things. I did a beautiful piece of teaching in here, and I actually walked you through different levels of sight. And I can't remember now what they were, but I remember I did it. Something's telling me I did it. I walked you through, you know, this and why this, and then where did it come from? And then how does it serve me? Right. And I did that. That's taking it very deep into your consciousness and pulling it out. Right. You can do that on your own. You know, it's nice to have a guide, but you don't have to have a guide for that. You just have to have the willingness, right? The drive to do it. Don't give up and don't be afraid to continue, even though what you're moving into can feel scary, because it can. But it has no, the fear has no power over you. It never did. You just have to turn around and face it. That's all. Just turn around and face it, right? And move forward, you know, knowing that you're greater than that. I appreciate it. All right. Beautiful song for this evening for meditation. I hope you enjoy it. Remember, we do this meditation to give you an opportunity to kind of clear anything. Consciousness sheds itself when we're doing this work. So it's an opportunity for you to just get still and just allow me to work with you right now for these few minutes as I help to transmute these energies. So that being said, all our love to you, and we will see you next week for Satsang. Thank you so much. Good night.
Tvameva bandushta sakha.